Welcome to Explainable AI. We're demystifying digital minds as your personal journey into the heart of artificial intelligence. I'm Paul Anthony Claxton, an AI venture capitalist and serial entrepreneur. After a decade of service in the U.S. Marine Corps, that is where I was captivated by the power of battlefield technologies. I've since been inspired to dive deeper into the world of enterprise technology. My commitment to making a meaningful difference has led me into venture capital, where today I view capital as a powerful tool to drive positive change. As a recognized thought leader in AI and venture capital, I also regularly share my insights through podcasts such as this and articles on major platforms like IdeaScale, AI Accelerator Institute, and so forth. You can learn more about me at my personal website, paulclaxton.io. And now to Rohan Hall.
Hi, everyone. So my name is Rohan Hall, and I'm the CEO of a venture studio. The venture studio is Osesha, OCESHA.com. And my background is in deep tech. I've worked for multiple Fortune 500 companies over the years, and I've been building startups. And we have different startup portfolio that we support in our venture studio as well. So our focus is really learning how to use technology for good. And in this particular podcast, our focus is really demystifying AI. We're speaking with some of the most brilliant people on the planet, and we'll break it down into bite size so that everyone can follow on and understand not only just where we are today, but where we're heading. And so today, we're speaking to the very, very brilliant Bruno Noir. Did I pronounce it the last name right, Bruno?
Yes, Bruno is okay.
Okay, Bruno. But I'm a big fan of Bruno, and we'll get into why in a minute, because I just really love brilliant minds. We'll let Bruno do a full intro for himself, and then we're going to ask all kinds of really great questions, because I'm super excited about digging a bit deeper into the things that he's been doing. Bruno, do you want to give an intro of yourself?
Thank you, Rohan. Okay, I'm Bruno Maisonnier. I'm from France. I'm living in Paris, and I used to create startups, different areas. My main previous startup was called Aldi Robotics, and we used to create human robots, now paper robots. Maybe we can speak about them, and we turn world leader with these robots. And now I created another company called Another Brain, my goal being to create a chip working exactly like the brain in terms of AI, a real AI, very frugal in energy and in data. And besides that, I co-created several startups in the space area, in health area, and in AI too. I'm an entrepreneur. I love the deep tech. Each time it's deep tech for people, I want to help people. My ultimate goal is to help people, is to use this technology to help people. And my deeper background is more like a handcraft man, polyhandcraft man, than something else. I perform studies in high-tech, polytechnic, and telecom, and so on. But I used to create furniture, I used to create jewels, I used to create leather clothes. So I like to learn by doing. I like to learn with my hands. I like to learn how the matter is working, how things are working deeply connected to the real world. So it's who I am.
That's super excellent. Yeah, to get a little bit deeper into that, however, you're focusing on humanoid robots, but some of the cool things, when people start looking around about your stuff online, we're seeing dancing robots and we're seeing all these kind of things, right? Can you tell us a backstory? How do you get from dancing robots to humanoid brain, or until where's that coming from? And just give us a little bit backstory on that.
Wow, it's coming from far away ago. I was very bad at school when I was a kid. Always the last ranked one in the classroom, fired from a school to have to go to another. My parents are unhappy, all this kind of stuff like many others are sharing. Till then when I got, let's say, a comic book in a station in France, Marvel comic books. And there were a lot of superheroes there. I hated them because it's easy if you are flying invincible or whatever. But one was Iron Man. And this guy invented his superpower. He had no superpower. He used his brain to create his armor and his superpower. And in these comics books, I was 12 at that time, they were speaking about power transistors, about electronics. Wow! So I upset my parents saying, I want to do electronics. So please register me to a by mail course, what they accepted to do finally. And this helped me getting back in the scholar system because every week I received booklets about logics, about materials, about physics, mathematics, Boolean, and so on. I received components, iron to melt them and to wire and whatever. So I started creating electronics and it helped me finding an interest because, as usual, when you are not interested and when you don't see purpose of what you are doing, then you are not doing anything. And then it helped me getting back at a high level in school and it turned me interested in fiction, science fi scientific fiction. So I read books and, of course, there were robots everywhere. So I started creating my own robots. I had no money. My parents had no money, so it was a wooden robot. I designed the gears, wooden gears. You see how it cannot work. But I did these kind of things, and I succeeded in making a robot that was, let's say, more like a cockroach robot. It was just getting under the furniture, so escaping from light or these elementary things. But it turned me with an interest to this robotic. And when I was a student, we were students at 20, I discovered that IBM was the leading company, IT company in the world. Apple was not here, Microsoft was not here neither. I discovered that IBM had been created in one man's life. So I defined my goal. Okay, my goal is to create the IBM of robotics. So I was 20, and so I was totally knowing anything about business, about economics, about networking, about really, I was very bad at all that. So I had to learn. So I had my kind of big goal, dreaming goal of creating IBM of robotics. But in between, I started in an IT company, then in a bank. I did IT, I did finance, human resources, communications. I lead a bank in France and in other countries till 2005, where I founded Aldebaran Robotics. And 10 years after, we were a world leader. We had beat Sony in competition, Microsoft, who came at that time with an offer called MSRS, and then Google, who showed up with buying 11 companies of robotics and willing to be the world builder of consumer robotics. But we turned world leader. And the giant SoftBank bought my company. So it's an adventure who lasted 10 years for me. From zero to a world leader with 600 people on board. And we are very happy with what we did with these robots. And this shape is very important. Humanoid is very important. Maybe it's something you are interested in, but
Yeah, I think that's an amazing story, and we're gonna definitely go deeper in the human art. Like you, I started out with comic books as well. I'm from Jamaica, and I found a Spider-Man comic book on the way home from school one day, and I've read every comic book since then, and seen all of these Marvel things on the big screen in the last few years
Spider-Man
has
was
been
my second favorite.
okay. So Iron Man.
I tried to produce this thing. Yes.
Yeah, it's so funny. Iron Man was my second favorite for the same reasons for you that I never liked superheroes that were born with it. I like superheroes that had to create it. And so I like Iron Man, Batman as well, etc. But one of the things, I read a book recently called Tech for Good. And one of the points that I make, because I go over all the top 10 emerging technologies, robotics is one of them, of course, neural computing, edge computing, AI, etc. And one of the points that I make is that all of these things that are now emerged or currently emerging, these are from the comic books. These are things that we read about like decades ago that were just fantasy, and now they're becoming a reality. And so I always suggest for parents that if you want to teach this stuff to your kids, just go to the comic books. If you talk about robotics or the positronic brain or those kind of things, you go back to the things that you're seeing with Iron Man, with Vision, with those kinds of things. If you want to talk about nanotechnology, you go back to Ant-Man. If you want to talk about AR VR, you're going to, again, Iron Man and talking to his little AI and his mask. And so a lot of these things that we're now using as emerging technologies, We learn them as science fiction, whether it's Star Trek or Star Wars or the
Thank God.
Marvel comic books. And it's the easiest way for a parent or teachers to teach this to kids, which is really important because it's not optional anymore. The world has changed, and these are going to be our realities. We can't really put our head in the sand anymore. So I think I'm a very big proponent of education, and especially for kids to learn this stuff. So it's really fascinating to see that was one of your inspiration was the Iron
And
Man.
it's very powerful a way to turn kids interested in learning in science
Yeah,
and in the
absolutely.
future, much more
Absolutely.
than rational explanations.
Yeah, nobody cares about learning math, but everybody wants to know how to build a robot.
Yes, yeah.
So it's the same thing. But Paul, I'll let you jump in, Paul. Sorry about that. I can talk comic books all day long, and I can talk robots all day long. So I'll let you jump in, Paul, with your follow-up questions.
Yeah, what I'm most fascinated about, and I think this conversation has been very inspiring so far, but and thought-provoking, which has led me to this question that I'm really fascinated and excited about is what holds stake for the future in terms of like humans, how we interact with technology, and is technology itself becomes more human and integrated pieces of our life. What does society in your mind, Bruno, look like 10 years from now, 20 years from now, in your mind? And I consider you a trailblazer, definitely, Bruno, and someone who is essentially a futurist. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
It's a question of time frame. Just to tackle the subject, in the longer term, let's say 20 year and more, the most important technology will be genetic engineering. And it's something nobody's speaking about. But we started to have the tools to engineer the DNA. And when we will be able to do that on human people, let's say at a large scale, we will be able to cure children from dramatic disease, but we will be able to help many things. And I'm sure the defense, the army will use this technology to boost their soldiers, which will give larger scale and larger cohort of people experimenting. And then we will go further. We will have maybe a spray of viruses. Sorry, I apologize for my English. That will help even changing the color of your eyes, changing your DNA. So I'm sure in the midterm, long term, we will have such kind of things, and this will drastically change humankind. We may be not all compatible anymore from a DNA point of view. Or it's something that will arrive. It can be scary, it's powerful, and nobody is speaking about that because it's like too scary. But for me, the technology are built today. And it will help changing things in a strange way. For instance, today there are still countries killing little girls, little baby girls, and we all know why. So tomorrow they will be able to choose if it will be a girl or is it better? Is it worse? I don't know. But it's not good to kill little girls. So for me, this technology will change the world in the mid-long term. In between, we will have robotics and AI. First AI and then robotics. As for robotics, there are two different, let's say three different markets, businesses. One is about humanoid robots for the factories, for the plants, as Elon Musk and all the other Chinese are doing. The interest of those robots is that if you have a production line with, let's say, 70 different jobs, people working in a row, either you want to improve that, automatize, turn, increase the efficiency, then you will transform each and every of these posts, working posts, into a robot, dedicated robot, very efficient. But you will need to have 70 different dedicated robots. It's painful, expensive, and so on. The alternative, if you are able to build a humanoid robot, able to use the tools that and the working posts that have been defined for people, then the robot will be able to automatize everything immediately. So in plants, for me, it's obvious that there will be robots everywhere that will substitute the different jobs of the people. They will work 24 hour a day. They will learn from their mistake and increase the speed of what they are doing and so on. So it's obvious. But those robots will operate in a very dedicated environment. A plant is not the messy world that we have at home or that we have outside. A plant is something that is constrained, is organized, is cleaned up. So a plant is something that is very under control. If you want to have robot at home, so the second category is robot in order to help people, robot at home, companion robots, or in hospitals, healthcare system, and so on. Then you need first to have robot able to interact with people. Interaction will be the first function. Second one, you need to have robot that people will accept. Because my grandmother would never had a robot, a humanoid robot, the one you at last or Elon Musk one. Never. She would be scared. So we need to have robots that are cute and easy things like a small robot, because you have to look at the robot lowering your eyes, your sight. Because if the robot is dominating you, it's creating a very strange constraint and people won't like that. So you need such kind of things. But you need a robot that will be able to understand all your interaction. And if I'm saying, okay, close this window, the robot has to be able to understand my gesture and what I wanted to show and so on. Or if the robot has to monitor an old person, if the old person is afraid, scared, or has pain somewhere, even saying nothing, the robot has to be able to understand that. So the interaction, the body language reading, emotion reading are the main things. And there is another one, which is very important too. It's about safety, but in the term of hacking. You know what? I never had a humanoid robot at home. I produced a humanoid robot, but was I able to guarantee, to certify that nobody could hack the robot and make the robot moving in the bathroom of my daughter when she was taking a bath or shower? No. So that means if you want to have robot at home, you need to be absolutely certain that nobody can hack the robot. And if you say that to IT people, they all will laugh, saying it's just a question of time. Fuck, I want you to be totally unable. So I don't know if whether it's quantum cryptography or if it's just the robot is not connected. So then no way.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how far away are we from having that kind of certainty?
Not connected robots is not difficult, but you need then to have an AI, because the robot will be loaded with AI. You need to have an AI, an edge AI, portable one, able to operate and to be smart without being connected to the cloud. So this is important stuff, but it's
But
possible.
because they're not, if they're not at the moment connected to the cloud, doesn't mean that they can't connect later on and upload your data. So isn't that what you're, because you're talking about a privacy question, not the technology question. They're two different things, right? So with edge computing, you can certainly do everything that you're saying right now, because there's no need for connecting back to the cloud someplace, right? But you can have edge processing in real time, and then later on they go sync back someplace, right? So you have to make sure that there's no potential of further syncing back as well.
Absolutely.
So that would be a, because one of the things, so you've mentioned multiple really great points and all. So part of what I try to do is chunk back into things, right? So the stuff you started out with, more synthetic biology kind of thing, that is really one of the, and you're right, that there are not too many people speaking about that as yet. CRISPR is one of those things that, a technology that can be used to manipulate DNA, to rewrite DNA. There's really a lot of research that's being done by that. Again, in the book I wrote, Tech for Good, that's one of the chapters. It's really synthetic biology and what you can do with that. For example, I look at it more from a tech for good perspective, right? We're having problems all over the world with hunger. You can actually create your own food that look, taste, feel like chicken without having to kill a living creature or steak. So we can do that now. It's not really not ready for mass production, but we do have the technology today. If you want to manipulate people's DNA, obviously you can do that as well. What do you think the perfect baby looks like? And you can do that. So that's certainly one area that is also very much emergent. The stuff that you're saying as well regarding about the robots being needing to be, you made a couple of good points, because I was wondering before, the stuff that like the robots that you've done, what's it now? And another one, Pepper, what's it?
Pepper.
Pepper, yeah. And like there's a TEDx thing that the robot was like dancing. It was so
Yeah.
cool. Anyway, I'm gonna try to put a slice of that in when I edit the video. So the robot stuff that you're doing is really cool, but I did notice that they're all small, and now I get it, right? And you're totally right. If a robot is towering over you, you're gonna be less trusting than if you're looking down at the robot. And I never thought about that. So that's a very good perspective. But the other point that you made, which is really, if the robot is in your house and it's in the bathroom and your daughter's taking a bath or something, that really is a potential. And again, I didn't think about that because I don't build robots. So I'm not thinking about those problems. And Europe has been way ahead, or I'm not sure if it's ahead, but taking different position with privacy laws compared to the USA with these things, right? We're thinking about it in the USA more commercially. We want to go as fast as we can. And the USA, so Europe is thinking about it more from a privacy compliance part. So for just that last point, what's your
But
take
you
on
know,
that?
Rohan, this is the difference between robots for plants and factories, where this program is not at all the same, because the environment is controlled for safety and planet security and so on, and a robot at home, companion robots. Those are not for today, but the market is 10 times larger than the other one. But some technologies are still missing for that.
Tesla is building a bunch of robots that they're considering to be humanoid robots as well. You're referring to them as factory robots. I think I remember, I think hearing Elon Musk saying something maybe earlier this year in something that he's planning, he's looking at it being the biggest part of Tesla in the future, and that he's looking at everybody at home having one of those. What's your thoughts? Are they in the right direction for that? For Tesla, are you familiar with where they are with, because
Oui.
they're that's one of their biggest thing at this point is putting humanoid robots on the streets, and they're seeing that's going to be one of the biggest growth opportunities for Tesla in the future.
Yeah, I'm sure humanoid robots will be a large part, maybe a main part of Tesla and other car companies, but not at home or in the hospitals in the next 2 to 5 years. It will need more time. A robot is loaded with batteries and with motors. So there is heat from the robot. But if you want to have a robot in hospitals or at home, you need to be able to wash the robot, to clean the robot. Because my daughter will put yogurt on the robot or marmalade, I don't know what. You know? And in hospitals, they will need to be able to sterilize them. So that means robot needs to have a skin, but a skin which is permissive to heat. And so that means unloaded with sensors. So that means that there are still steps to be done before that. And the last part is, if you want a robot at home, you need to have a, how to say, a compliant robot, a soft robot, a robot you can hug. I don't know if you ever tried to shake hands with a robot. It's
No, I
now
have
apparently.
not.
It's totally unnatural. You don't know how to do what to do and so on. Totally unnatural. You need to be able to interact physically with a robot. That means it has to be smooth, soft, elastic, and so on. So, in my view, we need to change the architecture of the robots. And we need, in order to do that, to invent new motors. But to invent a new DC motor, you know what? The last one has been invented 1 century ago. It's not something that we can do easily. And for robot at home, we will need to invent new motors. I'm sure about that.
So it's not just a matter of training, it's a matter of the actual physical architecture. We're
Yeah,
not there as yet. Okay,
I think so.
that's cool. Paul?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with some of the sentiments. And Bruno, you had some very interesting points because, so right now, AI in itself is very, it's very atmospheric, right? It's like, we can't really see or touch it or feel it, but as we progress forward, it's going to become, like I said a few moments ago, it's going to become more integrated and more lifelike, right? And so that's when things like cybersecurity within the field of AI and the regulation of AI, that's when it gets more serious, right? At a whole new level. Because then we're talking about robots that are strong, like a car, like an engine. or like an assembly line machine that have way more power than any human does. And if these robots hallucinate, or if we can't understand why they're doing the things that we're doing, then there's this rift, and it creates a dangerous component to our daily lives. And we've seen some of this in movies as well. So there needs to be like that kill switch, so to speak, with AI systems that are integrated in the hardware that is moving around us in kind of lifelike forms and whatnot. So I think that's important. How do you feel about shutdown features within robots or machines, and being able to shut them down automatically, or have a kill switch, so to speak? And I don't think that it should just be like a button that you press on a machine, but there should be multiple accesses to kill switches, whether it's through your phone or it's voice operated or voice executed type of kill switch mechanism. But I think that there should be several, right? Because you're not always gonna, if a robot is going haywire and it's threatening your life, you're not always going to be able to reach for your phone, right? And so there needs to be multiple ways to kind of shut the systems down. Do you have any thoughts on that?
There is a mix in what we are saying about AI and robotics. First, I want to make things clear about that. Everybody, majority of people think that the solution for robots is AI, but there are two different worlds. The physical world, the real world, is a world of robots, of hardware, of things that are heavy. These metallic robots of Boston Dynamics or about Elon or others, they're heavy. And when you have 100 kilo robots falling down at your home, I hope your dog or your kid or no, nothing will be below. So when you say shutting down a humanoid robot, which is by definition unstable, we have to think about a procedure where the robot will safely go and lay or sit somewhere, which means the robot still has to be in control, which is the opposite of what you want to do. So that means it's not an easy stuff to think about and to solve. I'm saying the same for how a robot stays passive. When you have a dog at home, even if you are doing nothing and the dog is doing nothing, it's not inactive. It's moving, it's breathing, it's waving head because some noise came and he's watching what's happening. So there is autonomous life, which is sending you as a body language many things about how this interlocutor is behaving, friendly, not friendly, and so on. So we need to embed such kind of things in the humanoid robots, companion humanoid robots at home, not in the factory robots. So this is for the hardware part. And as for the AI and the software part, there are different areas where robots will need AI. Of course, understanding of a situation, of the context, understanding of the interlocutor, but even in the elementary movements the robot will perform. Because how are you going to teach your robot to, I don't know, to cut carrots or to cut bread or to cut whatever you want? How are you going to teach that to the robot? Are you going to program it? Of course not. So you have to be able to show it, to demonstrate. But it's not easy for a robot to understand what you are doing. Because if you are taking a carrot and cutting it, the reality is the carrot will be of a certain size at a certain place. You will cut with a certain knife, so the robot will be able to replicate your gesture. But if you put another carrot, another size at another place, it won't work. So you need to
Or
have the robot able to understand the purpose of the gesture you are doing. So we need
yeah,
motion, we need AI for that.
or
Sorry?
if I'm holding a carrot, so it's about
Yes.
understanding the scenario. Don't cut the carrot while I'm holding it. That can
Yes.
endanger me. Yep.
So you need AI at all the different levels in a robot. So the question, if we want to have disconnected robot, if we want to have autonomous robot, is to have AI that are able to work even we being disconnected, and robots that are able to have performing AI on situation never seen before.
Yeah.
On situation never seen before, which is totally opposite of the principles, basis of deep learning and LLM, where you are training based on millions of examples. So that means you need another kind of AI, a real AI, and it's what we are doing at another brand. Sorry,
Yeah.
Rod,
Right.
I had a
And
question.
yeah, I'm dying to talk about that. Before we get into that, though, isn't NVIDIA doing some? NVIDIA has something called Isaac Sim, which is like a AI, like a AI simulation kind of a room to train robots. I believe that's how Tesla robots are trained, which means that you don't have to go out in the field and do stuff. It's just simulation. Are you familiar with what they're doing with that? Is that
I don't exactly know what they are doing, but I'm familiar with
okay?
this kind of simulation to train robots.
Right.
Good way to go from zero to half of your
Yeah.
way of training the robot. But when
Okay.
you will train your robot in a virtual robot in a virtual room, it's great. The floor at your home is not flat. You have small things, small gestures. I don't know, a discrepancy. I don't know how to say that. It's
Stairs,
perfect.
stairs.
Yes, and if the robot is walking, as I said the last
Yeah.
time, in my daughter's room, there are socks on the floor, there are toys, it's a mess. The real world is a mess. And if you want to simulate a mess which is permanently changing and so on, good luck. So, in my view, we definitely need a robot able to learn by itself on the real world and to have an AI performing in new examples or new situations the robot has never seen before, which
So
is
that leads
very
us
dangerous.
to another brain. Is that what another brain does? Can you tell us some more about another brain and what is it doing and how is it different than these other models and these other ways that AI is being used today?
Yes, it's a starting point of another brand. It's because I wanted such kind of AI that I started interesting myself into AI. It was still at the time of Aldebaran Robotics. And I was not expert in AI. By the way, I was not expert in robotics when I started. And I was not PhD in robotics, and nobody in my team was PhD. So that's why we had to invent our way of doing. And we invented a way which was different from majority, and by chance we succeeded. If you are trapped, I don't know if it's a good word, sorry, trapped in the mainstream feeling or knowledge, then you will do the same than everybody else. So you may do
Agreed.
it a little bit better, but you will do the same than everybody. So you won't change the game. If you want to change the game, maybe it's better to have people that are not from the field. So I was not from the field in AI, so I started reading, learning, and meeting with people and so on, and I understood the power of deep learning LLM, of course, very powerful, with a lot of high drawbacks, but very powerful. But it's not intelligence. There is no intelligence there. It's a statistics, it's about zero intelligence. It's not able to address the situation I had. So I started trying to understand. And then somebody advised me to read a book written by Jeff Hawkins from California. The book is called On Intelligence. And this book is amazing. First part of the book explains the state of the art about knowledge around the brain. What do we know about intelligence? What do we know today? Because if deep learning and LLM and neural networks are not the right solution, so how to figure out another alternative, another solution. And by chance, we have a model which is working very efficiently. The human brain, animal brains, dog brains, mammal brains. Very good model, explain great. But the global feeling is great, but we don't know how it's working. So then it's not possible to get inspired because we don't know how real intelligence is working. And what Jeff Hawkins said in his book, and he's right, that's not true. We know many things about how the intelligence is working. Not everything, but many things. What is missing is a framework. And it's totally different a game to say we have no idea about how it's working than to say we have plenty of ideas, too many, but what is missing is this framework. So let's try. So he tried in his book describing a framework. Okay. He wrote another book explaining an evolution of this framework. Perfect. So we are working at another brand on an alternative one on our own. So we are creating our framework of how intelligence is working and how to implement that into algorithms. And we are getting there. I mean, we are now working at a demonstrator, demonstrating the power of our approach. And we've done half of the way of this demonstrator. In last July, 2 months ago, we presented to our board that has been amazed. So we have a second step, and it will be done the end of this year, early next year. And then we will have a demonstrator that will explain the power of what are calling organic AI, which is what we are doing, organic AI.
So being the little techie I am and very curious more. So what you just defined is really what we've been calling general intelligence. It's what you just said, right? Because the common thing about animals and people and all these things is we have general intelligence, right? We don't have to go and train something. We can walk someplace and learn and figure it out, right? And so that's what you're saying, that you're using organic systems that already exist. You said we know a lot about them, which is true. And you're saying that you're building a framework to model that. And that's what another brain is. Another brain is really building what we're calling AGI these days, or general intelligence. But that's where you're heading with that,
Absolutely. And we are
right?
doing that under the shape of a simulator for now. But our goal is to embed that into a chip, an ASIC, not a general purpose chip like NVIDIA and like microcontrollers and so on. An ASIC, a dedicated chip embedding our AI. It's exactly what we want to do, what we are doing. And this ASIC is a small one, then it will be a real intelligence, but not very powerful. Real intelligence means able to make a decision in whatever situation, even never seen, to make a decision that is not totally stupid. This is what, and I would really say it's what our brain is doing. For instance, sometimes you see the clouds, you look at the clouds and you see a face in the clouds. Of course, there is no face, but you see that because it's not totally stupid with the shape and the shadows to see. It's how our brain is working. So by analogy, trying to see how it's closer to what I already know. And this thinking by analogies, so the basis of how our intelligence is working, is what we are embedding into our chip.
But ASIC chips are normally for special purpose decision-making things, right? Not general intelligence, typically.
No, ASIC are hardwired electronic circuits. And if you are doing a hardwired circuit doing only one thing, then it will be one gold chip. But if you are embedding your algorithm, and this algorithm is the very same, whatever, but depends, what you are going as an outcome will depend on what you will put here as an income. So it's not the chip itself that will change. Our ASIC will embed different blocks all the same. What is changing is the signal you are putting inside. So if we are putting camera, it will be visual analysis. If we are putting with the very same chip, if we are putting microphones, it will be a sound analysis, voice recognition. And this is what we already demonstrated in July. With the very same algorithm, like our brain, we are doing vision analysis or sound analysis.
That's pretty cool.
You know, our
Because
brain.
I'll ask 20 questions. I'll let Paul jump in. I'll let Paul jump in before I do some work. Go ahead, Paul.
I think it's interesting when we talk about autonomous robots. And somebody had asked me a question the other day. What do you think about Sam Altman's statement of we'll have a $1 billion company, a $1 billion one person company on behalf of AI? And I said, I think that there's some nuance to that. I think that it is possible to have essentially a $1 billion one person ran company, but you're not going to have AI doing everything that it takes to run a company. Companies are too complex, even at the B2C level, but especially at the B2B level, there's too much complexity and negotiation involved in running the business operation. You have to have marketing, you have to have audits. People have to be involved in the company. So maybe you have a CEO and then he or she is extracting contractors from the market for certain needs of the company, but they're not actually employees of the company. So in essence, you do have a $1 billion one person company. And then you've got AI agents and or robots, say for example, you've got a lot of automation. So the company is 99% automated. And I think that works again in a B2C format where the transactions and where the path to market is more transactional and linear, but I don't necessarily think it works in a B2B format so much. So in essence, I think Sam Altman's statement needs to be taken with not at face value, but with some thought, some reasoning, and a grain of salt ultimately. Do you think it, let me ask you though, Bruno, do you think we're anywhere close within the next 10 years to having a one-person, $1 billion company?
First, I think it's a concept, what he said. It's not for real, we will have companies, $1 million, one person. It's a concept saying that AI will help many ways, and maybe not today, but each day more. And you will figure out some companies probably creating technology, only creating technology that could be bought by a larger company for $1 billion and then say answering yes, your question. But you are right. It won't be possible to make sales with only one person, because sales is a question of a lot of people contacting a lot of customers and so on. So it's more like a concept. But I think this concept is very powerful. And I can tell you, in my company, we were 65 persons three years ago. We are improving using the different technologies and so on. Today, we are 12, and probably we could be even less in the future based on these new technologies, because many things can be implemented. We are using, for instance, these generative models as challenger. Okay, I want to do that, this task, and this is how I want to do. Do you think it's okay? And then it's telling me things. Usually there are many things wrong inside, but I don't care. Which is important is he has another approach. So he is answering another way. It helps me creating differently and so on and so forth. And after some steps, okay, so write a program in order to do that. Program is not perfect, not very good and so on. But then I can improve it by myself. This is this game of go between, exchanging, improving together and so on. And yes, these generative models are helping more and more regularly. So for such kind of very specific tasks, I think we can do many things with few people and these tools, these AI tools. Yeah,
I agree with that. As an entrepreneur and build a bunch of companies and all different kind of roles, we have a fraction of the amount of people today than I would have had in a company 5 years ago. And we're doing multiple amount of things and much smarter things that we would pay tons of money to lawyers or to marketing people, even to developers. We can do, and we don't lose quality. We actually have better quality. Things that you would hire a whole bunch of people in Pakistan or someplace to create content and all these things. You can sit there with simple LLM and you can create much better. So I remember when he said that, and I don't take it literally as meaning here's a bunch of AI agents running around doing things. I don't think of it that way. I think of it as more efficiency. The majority of things you need lawyers to do today, if you just sit there with a ChatGPT, and if you really understand prompt engineering, you can create the same things even much better. You can write patents. There's so many things. So I think when I think about that, I think about what we're doing for all such ventures and the things that we're able to do and the resources that we're using compared to what we would have to have done 5 years ago. So I do believe conceptually that's very possible. And I do believe that. And that it will most likely happen. I do want to switch back to one more thing, though, that we've touched on before. Your little robot. So one of the things that one of our portfolios is called Autism Inventory. And so we're focused on helping children, or actually helping parents with children with communication disabilities, right? And different communication issues, autism being one of them. One in every 31 child in the USA is autistic, according to the CDC in February in the USA. And if you go broader to speech communication, one in every 5 children in the world has some kind of communication challenges. And so that's one of the problems that we're solving with this particular company. In fact, we're launching under the print brand on Speak and Play in a week from now to address that using AI. What I really like with your robots that you're doing, and I wanted to get some feedback from you with the progress that you've seen, is that you have some, and you can explain it better, child-friendly robots that can help children with autism and different speech communication. What have you seen as an outcome for that? Where do you see that going? I'm really fascinated in learning more about the research on the results, just to educate the audience. And for me personally, I'd love to learn, because it's one area that I really am very passionate about, that area. And I'd love to know from the robotics, we've been looking at it from the AI software approach. I'd love to hear about it from the robotics approach, what you guys have been doing.
I think from a robotics part, it's quite interesting. Yes, from Now Paper, Now Robot, the small one, first market was education to children, being for language, being for mathematics, and being from autistic kids. And for autistic kids, we discovered afterward, we discovered that some of our customers were buying a lot of robots. What for autism? And the first one was Hospitals of Notre Dame in the US. So they have been pioneers in this field. And actually, they discovered that autistic kids cannot communicate easily. They have difficulties, limitations, but they are comfortable with technology. So they are able to communicate correctly and to interact correctly with technology. Then the idea was, hey, why not to use this tool as an interface between the kids and between the parents? And it's actually, it's working. I was not there, but my team was there. They have seen a kid, a boy, of, I don't remember, 7 years old, I think, who never had said hello to his mother. Spend an afternoon with the robot, at the end of the afternoon, said hello to his mother.
Wow, that's amazing.
And the mother
that's
was crying,
really
of course.
cool.
We imagine it. But the robot helped creating a habit of communication, of wording, say hello before beginning. I don't know how they did that. But in one afternoon, for the first time of his life, the boy said hello to his mother. I think there are a lot of things that can be done, because this robot is easy for adults to interact with and to teach and even to program, but in a very graphical way. So there are things that can be done. And the kids will be able to improve a lot using those robots, because it can help for communication skill, but it can bring them toward technology, toward program, toward other jobs for the future. So yes, it's absolutely amazing. I agree with you.
Does it use some kind of gamification or dialogue, or how does the robot interact with the child?
What I understood, it's not a question of gamification, or maybe everything is gamified, but I don't know if it's the key point. For instance, in Korea, South Korea, they were using the robot to teach English to the kids. Koreans are not great at English, so they wanted everybody to learn English correctly, and they had problem of accent. And the question is, when you have a teacher teaching English, an accent, how to speak and say things, if it's not pronounced correctly, he will repeat and repeat, and after two or three times a row, there is a constraint coming, this kind of uncomfort in the discussion. But with a robot, he could ask 20 times in a row, there won't be any, yeah, really, for real. So that means there are things that we are, it's the interaction with robot, and use of robot, and the place of a robot interacting with somebody is totally different of what people think. I want to give you another example, important one for me. At that time, I was used to present my robot to TV shows and so on. And one day, leaving my company at the evening, I crossed an old person, old lady, and she pointed me saying, "Hey, I recognize you. You are the guy of robots. I saw you at the TV yesterday." Whoa, I was scared. What is she going to tell me? And what she told me was amazing. "I'm a dependent person. I'm a dependent, so I need every morning to have somebody coming at home and caring about myself before me leaving. And if the person is late, I have to wait. And if the person decided not to come, I'm fucked." And you cannot imagine how I'm expecting the time where I will have a robot depending on me. Depending on people is depending. Okay, of people, but it's dependence. And she told me she was expecting the other way around. And somebody from Google Robotics at that time had an accident and he turned paraplegic. So he turned in a chair. And he told me the same. You cannot imagine how difficult it is the first time that somebody has to clean you.
Yeah.
I would have dreamed to have a robot doing that.
Yeah.
And actually, when we think about caring about people, healthcare and so on, we have a kind of romantic idea. It's better if it's people. But please ask to the people that are concerned by that, people that are involved in this stuff. Maybe they don't think the same.
Yeah. And how far do you think are we away from robots helping in those roles for people, elderly people, or people that need those kinds of physical care?
As I said, in my view, I may be wrong, but in my view, we need to invent a new kind of motor. Architecture of robot will follow, but we have to invent a new kind of motor for that, an actuator of muscles, artificial muscle. And once we will have that, it will go very fast. But the question of inventing things, it's a question of a step. That means I don't know if it will take 1 year, 3 years, or 10 years to overpass this step. It could be 3 or 3 to 5 years. So that means I don't see those robots before 7 to 10 years.
Okay.
My view.
Hey, Paul, we need to wrap up in about 5 minutes. I'll let you shoot the last question, Paul, and then let's do a wrap up.
Yeah, I'd just love to talk about my only questions would be kind of the future for Another Brain and how that company is really going to be a trailblazer in the space. Are you going out and raising capital, or are you going to continue to shift towards bootstrapping the company, or what does the future look like for Another Brain?
Future is 2 steps. We have 1 milestone important. When we are going and meeting with investors, we will need cash to scale up and to change, really, to bring the world to a new generation of AI, because we have problem with carbon footprint, with energy consuming, with data. So we have to overpass all this stuff, and we are working on that. But when I'm explaining what we are doing, everybody is telling me, wow, great scientific background of what you are doing that's supported by great science. Goal is great, amazing, and so on. You have a track record, personal, and your team, amazing too. But it looks too beautiful to be true. So today, when I'm getting in meeting with people, this is the answer I get. So they are not investing or not going further on. So I stopped meeting with investors. So I decided to create my our demonstrator. So I will, okay, you don't, okay, let me prove you. I will show you. And our demonstrator is doing real-time learning already. We have that with the very same algorithm. We are understanding vision, sound, or whichever modality. So we already have that. So we have still things to improve, but we are getting there. Once we will have our demonstrator, hopefully first quarter next year, then we will go and raise funds. Yes, you are right. We will go and come back raising funds. And then we will be able to scale up, to go to markets. And I think there could be a lot of interest, because when you are able to jump over a current generation to the next generation, all those who feel left behind may have an opportunity to come back again in the game. And when I'm thinking about all those who feel left behind, countries feel left behind, so like France or Korea or Middle East, but companies, because in the world of AI, NVIDIA won the game. And the chip manufacturer, Sony, Intel, Qualcomm, and so on, are left behind. So maybe could they come back and jump into this next generation and then lead the game again? So that means there will be a lot of attraction. But first, we have to succeed in our demonstrator.
Yeah, I can totally see that vision. And I'm very familiar with all the limitations with GPUs and NVIDIA and all of those things as well. And I think we all know that's a limited shelf life. The stuff that you're talking about is actually quite fascinating. If you look at what they're doing with neuromorphic chips as well, it's another approach. And I think that's also another potential long-term
Neuromorphic chips are doing another way, but are doing deep learning in our networks. It's the same thing. You need data, you need energy.
But the hardware part of it is different. But I agree with you on the software part of it. I like what you're doing. It's not just based on probabilistic outcomes, it's based on actual learning. So I really love the approach very much. So for any investor that is watching this and looking, I think it sounds very fascinating. And I think
Thank you
it's
so much.
definitely worth a closer look for anyone that's looking at what's potentially the next big thing. Thank you very much. This has been very fascinating. And I will definitely spend some more time looking deeper into this as well, and also doing some follow-up. I'll let you wrap up, Paul, but before that, Bruno, do you want to leave some word? And also, how can people reach you if they want to talk to you about your company, if they're interested in investing in your company? Is there someplace they can get more detail as well?
I'm easy to find on LinkedIn or somewhere else. I'll be happy to discuss with everybody who want to know more about this technology, this approach. We are not the only ones trying that. There is an American company called Numenta. There are research labs trying the same. So we are different, maybe a handful, two handful of people working in the same field. And I don't know who is going to win. Maybe it's me,
Yeah.
maybe it's not us. Maybe we can lose this race. This is life of startups. I'm fighting for being successful, but I'm absolutely sure of one thing. General AI is needed because we don't want to have nuclear power plants just for AI. And I'm absolutely sure that the one who will create this general AI very frugal in energy will do with an approach the same than ours or Numenta or the other. I'm absolutely sure of that. So if I could help, I'd be happy.
I'll do one last touch point. For those that are watching, I know sometimes we get a little bit technical, but the summary of what Bruno's doing that's really fascinating is that what we're doing now using transformer technology and deep learning, it requires a lot of energy to be able to do that. And it will never be really accurate because it's really based on probabilistic outcome. So when something hallucinates, it's really saying that the probability of this, it thinks it's this, and it's a little bit off because it doesn't have context. And so the way that Bruno is solving this is the way that our brain is organic AI, which is the way that our brain works, right? So our brain doesn't need like nuclear plants to work. Our brain works because of the way it works, right? Which I apparently what Bruno and his team has done, they've figured out how our brain work organically. And they've figured out how to go ahead and replicate that without needing all the deep learning technology. And where it's not just focused on one thing, it's a general intelligence. So where this sounds like it's going, you can correct me with this, Bruno, or not, is that we've been talking about GI, which is where we're all running to with transformer technology. But what Bruno is talking about is literally that they've really built it. They're just really trying to prove now that it works, but that's literally what he's saying. For
Absolutely.
my understanding of it is that
Absolutely.
you literally have the answer to GI, and you're looking for investors to be able to help you bring that to market. Is that a correct assessment?
Good summary. Thank you so
Okay.
much.
Okay, cool. All right. We need to wrap this up. Paul, do you have something else that you want to say quickly?
No, I don't have anything else to add at the moment. I wish we had all the time in the world. I'd love to stay on here and talk tech and AI, robotics, and business much longer, but it looks like we have run out of time. Bruno, I think you've certainly piqued our listeners' interest, and we're really excited to share this conversation with the business community. And for all those that are embracing AI or AI practitioners, or just new to the space, I think we've had a really valuable conversation here. So we definitely appreciate your time, Bruno.
Thank you.